Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
Can you still hear okay?
I dropped out on mine. I think it's just the cord.
Gavin, you're fired.
Oh, we can proceed.
To which part?
I'm Dan Nalen, and you have tuned in to the Soundwaves from the Underground podcast, the official podcast of Slug Magazine, recorded live in the Jeanette D. Moses Memorial Podcast Studio in Salt Lake City, Utah. And if you don't know where that is, it's in the basement, the oh-so-cold basement below Slug's offices. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and it is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action, sports, and subculture. In this episode, this is a seriously primo episode. We have a Sundance breakdown, we have a Slam Dance breakdown, and Jeffrey Stedman from Yelp pops in to talk about some of the best Indian food Utah has to offer. We are here in the Soundwaves from the Underground official recording studio with Jory Carroll and John Ford, who covered Slam Dance for Slug Magazine this year. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Why don't we start with just some general impressions of Slam Dance? And for people who don't know, it's a great independent film festival that obviously goes on at the same time as the Sundance Film Festival and assorted other things up on Main Street in Park City. And how about any kind of general impressions? Why don't we start with you, John?
I always have a good time. I reported everything for Slam Dance last year. And it's all in one location, so it's a little bit more intimate. You get to see a lot of the filmmakers. They're all right there at the same place. And
a lot of interaction immediately upon screenings and afterwards.
Exactly. And there are a lot of parties there as well, so you get to know them throughout the week. So it's kind of nice that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Jory, anything? This is my first time doing it, right?
First year covering it, but overall impressions were... I was impressed by the movies. Most of the films you see are, from first-time directors. And they had a new thing this year called Beyond, where they brought a couple directors from the past who already did a movie, but they're still not, they're still trying to find their audience.
Sure.
And I saw one of those films. It's called Diamond on Vinyl. I was really impressed with that. But, yeah, I mean, 90% of the movies, it's really... They're good. So.
Yeah. Well, why don't we start with that? Why don't we just get into some highlights from each of you guys? John, why don't you give us a couple of your, maybe the two that are at the top of your list, if you can do that, if it's able to whittle it down that way.
This year I have an all-time favorite movie, and it was called What Isn't There? It was a film by Marija Mora. It was made in the Philippines, filmed in Manila. Actually, the original title was Ang Nawawalang, which
well spoken.
I hear translates roughly to The Missing or something general like that, but they retitled it What Isn't There for us nice American people. And it actually got into the Cinemalayan Philippine Independent Film Festival and won the Audience Choice Award there, and also Best Original Music, but which it deserves because the music in this film is incredible.
Nice.
I actually already bought this soundtrack, so...
Whoa, yeah, that's an endorsement if there ever was one.
Right?
Spending good money on the thing already.
Yeah, but it's kind of a coming-of-age tale and also a young love story. It follows a kid who's about 20, whose name is Gibson, and at 10, his twin brother passed away, and he kind of saw the whole situation, and since that moment, he hasn't spoken at all. So he's kind of a self-imposed mute, if you will.
Right.
And it's kind of, he's come back home for the holidays to spend more time with his family. And it's also around the time of the anniversary of his brother's death. So he has to deal a lot with that. His family's kind of growing more and more distant because of situations like that. And, he's kind of rekindling different things with his friends. And he meets a young girl named Enid. And they kind of, start hitting things off. And...
Yeah.
And he kind of, sort of discovers who he is throughout the course of the film.
And far and away your favorite of this year, huh? That was the one?
Little bit.
Yeah, excellent. Is there anything even close? Anything else within the same realm?
Probably my other two films that I liked a lot were Best Friends Forever and a German film called Kohlhaas. Best Friends Forever was made by Bria Grant and Vera Miao. They co-wrote it, co-produced it, and Bria Grant directed it. And they both star in the film. But it's about two best friends who kind of go on a road trip from LA to Texas because one of them is going to be going to college there. And during the course of the road trip, nuclear apocalypse hits. And it's kind of interesting because through a good portion of the road trip, they have no idea what's going on. So that allows for some humor there.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the end, it's just kind of an examination into friendship and, you know, when everything goes to shit, what's really important to you.
Right. Oh, that sounds good. I'm a big fan of when a small budget indie movie tackles something and can wrap in nuclear holocaust, you know, in there.
They funded the post-production for the film through Kickstarter. So.
Oh, really? Oh,
so wow. They could still retain control over everything. So that was nice.
Cool. And what was the other one?
Kohlhaas, which is a German film. And it's interesting because it's kind of like a film within a film, but no dreams.
And, thank God.
But part of the movie is kind of a documentary about the film being made, and then it flips back and forth between that and the film that they're shooting itself. If you've ever made any type of a film, you'll love this because it's essentially everything about the movie goes wrong. Like the opening scene, production pulls the funding for the film, and they lose half their crew, and the director just begs everyone. He's like, please stay and make this movie with me. And, you know, it's a historical film based in the 1600s, and so they need, like, horses and weapons and armor, and they have none of that. And he's just like, stay and make this film with me, and, you know, we'll imagine things that are... And if we imagine it, it will become real.
Right.
So it's entertaining that way, and just, like, more and more things just start to go wrong with the making of the movie. The director believes that if you imagine it, it becomes real. And it's interesting because as they go through making the movie, things become real. And they're just, like, acting things out, like, especially fight scenes. But when they imagine it becomes real, suddenly there's, you know, sound effects in the background, and they actually have swords when they're just swinging their arms around and, you know, swords clanging together. The final battle scene is incredible because it's, you know, they're having all these swords and, you know, bows and arrows and different things like that, and they have nothing in their hands. They're just, you know, moving around, and there's sound effects behind it to show that they're imagining it.
Right.
But then one of them has a pump-action shotgun, and it's hilarious.
Oh. That sounds like a fun. Jordy, did you see any of these as well?
Most of it, we kind of each split the...
Coordinated?
Yeah, so we all saw different films, but...
All right. Well, what were a couple of your favorites from this year's Slam Dance?
About half and half were documentaries and the other were narrative features, but for the documentaries, one of my favorites was, it's called The Bitter Buddha. It's directed by Stephen Fine Arts, but it's just kind of, it's kind of like the life story of the comedian Eddie Pepitone.
Mm.
He's not really a household name, but in the comedy circuit, you know, he's kind of regarded as well-known.
Yeah, kind of a revered character.
Yeah, there. So this is kind of documentation of his life in, you know, film, and, you know, it's just really fascinating to see, you know, why... his style of comedy, and, you know, why some people like it, some people don't like it, and why he's never kind of, you know, made it out of the ditch and kind of into the more mainstream stuff.
Right.
But yeah, then there's a bunch of comedians in it too. There's Mark Maron, Patton Oswalt, Sarah Silverman, and Zach Galifianakis, and they all kind of give their what they think about Eddie and, you know,
modern just, comedy royalty.
Yeah, there. Just what it's like to be, you know, a traveling comedian in today's world. And
cool.
Yeah, so that's probably my favorite documentary I saw. And then as far as narrative features, there's this German film called Visitors, and the director is some, I can't really pronounce it, but it's German.
That happens.
The Germans did get it slam dance this year.
Yeah, right.
But this Visitors is just kind of a, even though it's filmed in Germany and it's all subtitles, you can kind of it's relatable to, like, a lot of families here in America. The basic plot is this family, they have three children. They all grow up, move out, move to the city, and they're all kind of doing their things. But their mom and dad still support them financially.
Mm.
And so, you know, they kind of drift apart, don't really speak to each other that much. But then their dad gets this news that he's losing his job, so he won't be able to, you know, kind of keep it freeloading his kids, you know, giving them money and all this stuff.
Right.
And so he travels to Berlin and just kind of, you know, tracks down his kids and, you know, tries to get them all together to tell them this news. And, you know, it just kind of explodes and all this shit comes out about their past and, you know, trouble raising each other. And
right.
So it's just really, it's dramatic, but it's a, you know, a really good story. And the ending's really, I don't want to, you know, give away the movie, but, you know, you know, the father kind of, you know, I think he has some health problems. Due to that, you know, it kind of brings them all back together, you know, kind of.
You get, I,
It's kind of a feel-good.
Without giving a spoiler.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's still good, though.
Nice.
It's really good.
That sounds good. Well, what each of you, you know, as you went into Slam Dance this year, I mean, did the films you ended up seeing, and I think, John, you said you've seen, what, 27 this year?
Yeah.
I mean,
15 features and 12 shorts. So.
Jory, do you have a running count or a ballpark there?
I've seen 12 full-length movies, and each of the ones usually has a short in the middle.
So, we're looking at a lot of film you guys have been watching up there.
Yeah.
I mean, did the quality exceed your expectations? Kind of meet them? I mean, compared to maybe some past experience or?
It was interesting. There were a couple that I went in and I was like, I know I'm going to like this movie. Right. But there were also a couple that I went in with, like, you know, not much expectation for, you know, a couple that I was like, oh man, I have to review this one.
Right.
And then it just totally blew me away.
Yeah.
like, what isn't there? I was like, not expecting that much. And then it was my favorite movie of the whole festival. So, you know, there were a few of those that, you know, kind of went above my expectations. So that's always nice.
Yeah. And I was kind of surprised. There's a couple of movies that I saw where they were just kind of, they weren't documentaries and they weren't really dramatic, but they were just kind of just straight comedies. You know, I didn't expect there would be movies like that, but there's one called He's Way More Famous Than You. That was one of them. And then the other one was called Ghost Team One. And they're just, you know, there's no real point. It's just, you know, laugh your ass off and have a good time. But both of them are well done. You know, I really liked them and, you know, I was surprised by that. So
it's always kind of nice when there's some comedy injected into any of these festivals, that Slam Dance or Sundance. Because, you know, the stereotype is that you're going to get this dark, super weird, super unrelatable, you know, that's just such a stereotype. Yeah. But then you get something that's just funny and laugh your ass off for 90 minutes, and it's like, what a treat.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you've seen five dark things in a row or something. But was there any particular buzz up there just when you guys were talking to people were other people getting turned on by the same movies you guys were? Or, you know, was there anything that you're like, oh, I really need to make sure I see this after you heard about it from someone else?
Yeah, there were a lot of conversations about, you know, which films do you need to see and sort of things like that. There was a film called Big Words, which is about, it's based around the time of Obama's election in 2008, and it's about three guys who were in a hip-hop group in the 90s. And unsuccessful hip-hop group. And now they're kind of, you know, dealing with their lives. It had some really great dialogue and some great references to 90s hip-hop.
Nice.
But yeah, there was another documentary called Terms and Conditions May Apply about all of the terms and conditions that we sign into whenever we click that little I agree button.
Yeah.
And that one, it wasn't really funny, but it had a lot of, like,
scary.
Holy crap, look at all this stuff that just goes out onto the internet, but not in a terrifying way, but in a, maybe just reconsider before you click this button or before you upload these photos.
Maybe you don't want this going out to the world. Jory, anything like that that you came across talking to people? Word of mouth movies you made sure to see?
I know when I first got up there, there's a film called Diamond on Vinyl, which is part of the Beyond program. Like I said, I heard a lot of people talking about that. You know, kind of that was one of the ones that really seemed to be on people's watch list. But
yeah,
you know, even the film He's Way More Famous Than You. I mean, there's a bunch of the director's Michael Urie. He's kind of a somewhat, you know, well-known actor.
Yeah.
He's done a bunch of sitcoms and stuff. But there's a bunch of, you know, famous people. That's probably the one movie that there's a bunch of famous people in. You know, there's Ben Stiller has a cameo, and at the screening there's a bunch of people from their camp there, so it's kind of a big party inside the filming the screening room. So
that is fun. I like that vibe at Slam Dance is a whole different thing. It's great. You know, like, you can hang out, go get a drink right afterwards.
Yeah, the only bad part though
is
your ass gets pretty sore from sitting down because they don't really have the most decent, you know, comfortable chairs. Right. They're just kind of your standard office chairs.
I don't know how you guys even can sit through all the amount that you do. Even if it is a comfy chair, like two or three films in a row or over the course of 8 hours, like, oh man, all right, I'm going to try to go to a couple more. Man,
that's when you go across the street to the pub and then come back to watch some more.
Yeah, loosen up a little bit, stretch the legs a little bit over to the bar next door.
Hit the pub, down to the pizza, and then come back.
Okay. Excellent. Well, you can check out a lot of reviews at slugmag.com from both this Slam Dance coverage and at the Sundance Film Festival. Everything that John Ford and Jory Carroll wrote is available for you. Thank you guys so much for coming in and sharing your insights with us.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
All right. For For those of you who have been possibly ignoring the hip-hop scene in Salt Lake City, you may not be on to Pat Maine yet, but that'll sure change soon. Pat Maine is a founding member of the Alive and Well family, and he originally MC'd under the name Kinetic. He dropped that name about 2 years ago and then released an EP called Nighttime Medicine shortly after that. More recently, Pat Maine has released his debut full-length album called Doomsday Charades on his very own Alive and Well record label. That just happened in December of 2012, and just this month, the album made the CMJ College Radio Hip Hop charts, peaking at number 7. We're going to listen to the song called Cave Life off of Pat Maine's sophomore album, Doomsday Charades.
Kinetic, would you burn to rock, rock, rock? Said I was born in cave, and I make break beats with rock, rock, rock break. Then I rap on acoustic wave, caveman raised, sun, moon praise. Suit made from what I couldn't fit on my full plate. Got a tool made for defending mine, jewelry made from an enemy's spine. One man's backbones, another man's necklace. Survival makes mankind, hand man cruel. So one man's body in a million years is another man's fossil fuel. Had to make rock fall, boulder stop hard. Etched in stone, yet survival still a lost art. I watch star keep ear to earth, fill a meal to murk. Equipped with instinct and a spirit that works, they couldn't hear my words. I spoke in grunts, cave art vocalized for a broken tongue. Though I burned it from blood and swollen thumb, the golden sun. Told them what my day's like, I made right. They're all in plain light, they look for deeper meaning, only complicating cave life. I mentioned I wrote in a clan, and we can make fire with just two sticks. Only elements control the land. We just give the land a sense of purpose. But then caveman came up with the plan. Now you control the land with just a purchase. What I wanna understand is human values dictate. Does it make the land worthless? Cause I'm pretty sure since we never really learned to burn shit. Food, fight, fuck is all we've been concerned with. Sure, it's time to do righteous stuff to life and such. But it's just food, fight, and fuck.
Purchase Pat Maine's album and find out more about Maine and his upcoming performances. Check him out at patmaine.com. And once again, we're getting one of our regular visits from Yelp Utah's Jeffrey Stedman, who is here to fill us in a little bit on all the delicious Indian food across the valley. Welcome, Jeffrey. Appreciate you coming by.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm pretty pumped to talk about Indian food. I went through a phase during a little bit of last year where that's all I could think about. All day long, Indian food.
Well, I know there's going to be some like good out-of-the-way places I've never even heard of yet, and there's awesome places even in the downtown area that people might not know about. And I know the Yelp readers will not let us down.
No, and in fact, Yelp readers are really passionate about Indian food. We'll get to it in a second, but you do make a good point. You know, there are some great downtown places, but Indian food is one of those things in Salt Lake where there's some really great choices in South Valley and away from sort of the normal core restaurants that we think about for Salt Lake. So that being said, maybe we'll jump into some downtowny kind of stuff and get it out of the way. We were just talking about Himalayan Kitchen, and it's just terrific service. The guy is waiting to pounce on your water the second that you're done. It's Himalayan and Nepalese food. So Nepalese food is, I mean, you're going to find some stuff there that's maybe has a little bit heavier Chinese influence. Yeah. Momos, I think you were talking about.
Momos. They have like some noodle things that you think are like, this doesn't seem like Indian food.
Yeah.
It's that influence of being on the border of China, right?
Yeah, that's it. That's it. So a lot of times you find Indian Nepalese food. A lot of times you find Indian Pakistani food, but that's kind of what we're after here is all that good stuff. Kathmandu is probably one of the first things that comes up on Yelp, 4.5 out of 5 stars, 54 reviews. That's 3142 South Highland, and they also have another Kathmandu 2. They have another location.
Ah.
Whitney S. says, great, huge menu of Nepali and Indian dishes, both vegetarian and carnivore options. Their lamb and chicken is very juicy, never dry. And Whitney's shouting out the Everest chicken, one of the best dishes she's ever tried.
Well, and that is one of the things I think I love about Indian food, too, is it is totally the kind of cuisine you can go with your vegetarian friends if you are a carnivore, or vice versa, and everyone's going to be pretty happy.
Totally,
you
know? Totally.
If you find the right place, they can do vegetarian stuff, great. And they do a lot of creative, meaty things that you don't necessarily find in American cuisine, you know. Like
right, lamb.
Lamb things.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Kathmandu, that sounds like a winner.
Yeah, absolutely. Bombay House, also 4.5 out of 5 stars after 114 reviews. That's pretty
wow.
Great rating.
Yeah.
2731 East Parley's, they have a new location, 7726 Campus View in West Jordan. I think that's Jordan Landing.
Okay.
Faye of the original place, the original location, says, love this place. Bollywood chicken masala, chicken tikka masala, lamb saag, garlic naan, mango lassi are just a few of my family's favorites. Great atmosphere, fantastic service.
I love that one because it's in an old steakhouse building, right? Like a log cabin. And you go in and all of a sudden it's like, we're in an Indian restaurant. This used to be a Golden Corral or something.
I hadn't thought about it, but you're right. There's a couple of these places that are... I don't know what I expect an Indian restaurant to look like,
right.
Or, you know, whatever, but sometimes they don't look like what you think they're going to look like.
A log cabin is not necessarily the first thing that leaps to mind, but the food is delicious. There
you have it. Case in point, Royal India, 4.5 out of 5 stars after 44 reviews. This is way out in Sandy, 10263 South, 13th East. Andrew S. says, even I, who loves hot food, had to admit that either it's because of the hot summer in general, this was a review I think you wrote during the summer, global warming, or just the sheer amount of spices in this puppy, they know how to warm your heart and clear out your sinuses. Now, Andrew S., any Yelper, you can click on their profile and see anything about them that they share, right? So one of the things Andrew S. did is he created a list on Yelp of his favorite Indian food places. And the guy knows what he's talking about. The really long reviews, he talks about each menu item that he had. So his list is called Indian Food Guide. I would highly recommend you check that out. Also, there's a Yelper named Harsha, and Harsha just moved, actually, in the last 6 or 8 months from Utah. But his list is still around here, Indian food in Salt Lake City.
Just excellent.
Great if you want some insight from people
easy
who know
cheat
what they're,
sheets.
Yeah, who know what they're talking about.
Right.
Another don't judge a book by its cover, Alibaba.
I just heard about this place over the holidays.
Yeah. 4 out of 5, 36 reviews. It's at 2646 South, 700 East. If you drive there, you're going to see a Tesoro gas station.
Oh, yeah.
And you're going to be like, where
do I order?
Yeah. This place has a devoted following, right? They share this parking lot with a gas station. you might wait just a little bit. There is like a board you can order off of. They have a more full menu as well. And this is where you go to get like your Indian food on the cheap. Now, Indian food typically is a little more expensive than other stuff. You're dealing
certainly
with, you know,
be,
9,
yeah.
10, 12 bucks.
Yeah.
You know, for something kind of simple. But, you know, you could probably, and the portions here are pretty generous. It's just a place that I thank Yelp for, because 2646 South, 700 East is a gas station in my book.
Yeah, it's right. I know that corner exactly.
Yeah,
right by Nibley Park there in the golf course across the street along there.
Yeah, hit them up.
Nice.
Hit up
I've heard
Alibaba.
Great things about Alibaba. All right.
Yeah, 4 out of 5 stars, and it's been reviewed 36 times. So.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
A couple other south part of the valley, 8660 South State is where you'll find India House, 4 out of 5 after 61. This is my own personal favorite Indian food around. Karen M. loves the naan, calls it buttery goodness, something you don't find everywhere, mango curry chicken.
Ooh.
And she shouts out their use of white meat, only use a white meat chicken. I actually prefer the dark meat
chicken.
Yeah,
exactly. They're doing something for the gringos out there, I guess, who want the white meat, but all right.
No, but it's legit. It's really, really good stuff. And they also have a buffet, many of these places do. And then Saffron Valley, 4 out of 5 stars, 48 reviews, 1098 West South Jordan Parkway. Tony L. says, this Indian joint is not your typical Indian restaurant. And they advocate themselves serving street food in a nice setting and it's a little cleaner, you know, than going out to street food. The whole thought is Indian street food, you know, in a nicer place.
A little nicer environment to hang out and actually eat the food rather than standing on the street.
Yeah, so it's kind of a little more playful food. I think they do on Saturday nights. They do like a dosa night, which if you're into dosa is really cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's something a little bit different. And again, south part of the valley represents.
Yeah, I knew that the South Valley has quite a few, and they're spread out from east to west, out there. And I've had good Indian food in Provo, and I'm not going to remember the name of the place now, but I know there's some down there. And Ogden's got a couple of relatively new ones going now. So it's another one of those cuisines that's sort of invading Utah and Salt Lake to the better of all of us.
Yeah, Midvale has a Ganesh Indian cuisine. What was the other one? Taste of Punjab right next to Szechuan Kitchen out there in Sandy at about 86th and 13th.
Mm.
I think so. Yeah, there's one that I wanted to mention. I can't vouch for it. Haven't been there. Don't know much about it. Called Zabiha Grill.
Ooh.
About 34th South in Redwood. There's pictures and it says Indian barbecue.
Ooh, I'm intrigued.
And there's a review. There's a few reviews on it. So I didn't want to bring it up till we can't really vouch for it myself.
Right.
But one of the reviews mentions they also do burgers.
Oh.
So that could be either great or not. But that's what I love about Yelp is, as people keep adding reviews, we keep finding out stuff like this. Look, I'm born and raised in Salt Lake and lived here almost my entire life. And I get on there and I find stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like these Alibaba or Zabiha Grill or these places that I just wouldn't know about otherwise because people are out there sharing. That's what Yelp is all about, is hearing from people what they love, what they don't love.
Well, when you look at these things that have 50 reviews or 60 reviews and they're averaging 4.5 out of 5 stars or something, it's like, I wouldn't say, I mean, any single person could be a complete maniac, but when you have 50 people who are saying, this is great stuff, you can buy that.
114 people at Bombay House and counting.
Definitely worth checking out. Well, as always, everyone, you should follow Yelp Utah on Twitter. That is @YelpUtah. And, of course, visit the site on a regular basis for all the new stuff going up all the time. That is yelp.com/salt-lake-city. Is that about right?
That's it. Or download the free app on your smartphone. Platform out there, we have an app for it. It's free to use.
Now we're talking. Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Jeffrey. Appreciate the insight on the Indian food.
Yeah.
Perfect. This is your weekly daily calendar for the week starting on January 29th and running into February. Can you believe it? It is already the dead of winter here. Thankfully, we have some great stuff to warm us up. On Wednesday, January 30th, the Toasters, Ska Classics, old school, seriously, playing at Bar Deluxe. That'll be a great show. If hip-hop is more your thing, over at the Depot, you can catch Aesop Rock, who has definitely risen up through the years to be playing a place as big as the Depot. He's always great. On Thursday, January 31st, it's time for Plan B Theater Company's latest. Adam and Steve and the MDC will be playing at the Rose Wagner. It is a story of an LDS man, his gay friend, and it's set against the backdrop of the passage of Prop 8, that little pesky law that kept gay people from getting married in California. On Friday, February 1st, the Ryrie Woodbury Dance Company has a weekend full of a little family-friendly show called Kaleidoscope. That comes from the magical choreography of one Alwyn Nicolai. If you've never seen his work, it's pretty trippy. Really colorful. It's going to be some of the best modern dance going around in this town. The same night, on February 1st, the Portland Cello Project. If you never thought cellos could rock, you were wrong. Go to the State Room and check this out. It's a really creative. They do some great covers, some great original stuff. It's one of the best live shows you'll see this weekend. Saturday, February 2nd, Delta Ray, a band often compared to Fleetwood Mac, and I have always had a soft spot in my heart for that classic rock monstrosity known as Fleetwood Mac. Delta Ray is headlining up at the Eccles Center in Park City, while down here locally, Max Payne and the Groovies will be playing at the Urban Lounge, doing that garage rock they do so well. Sunday, February 3rd, Slim Cessna's Auto Club bring a little bit of that rootsy rock vibe to the Urban Lounge. And then Monday, February 4th, Shadows Fall bringing some serious metal riffage to Kamikazes up in Ogden. Ogden really needs to have more metal on a daily basis, you know. So this is a big show for them. On a Monday night, there's not going to be anything bigger going on up in Ogden. That is your weekly daily calendar. As always, go to slugmag.com, check out the daily calendar, check out the new listings that go up there every day, and of course you can add new things to the calendar for free. And if you want to add a little quality content, videos, you know, a little extra bonus coverage for a mere $5 a month or $50 a year, you can certainly do that as well. Again, as always, check back at slugmag.com every day and you'll find some new quality content there waiting for you.
Unemployment economy. I need a dollar, 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 that's what I need.
How about a penny
Local hip-hop heads may have run across Johnny Utah in one of his many appearances opening for other hip-hoppers at places like the Pickle Factory and the Urban Lounge. He recently released his debut full-length album called Johnny 316, you know, that biblical text kind of way, just this past December. The album features music from local producers like Linus Stubbs, Yoga Flame Kane, Mike Booth, and Brisk One. We're going to listen to a song called Mistake off of Johnny Utah's debut album, Johnny 316.
Dedicated to all the Kim Kardashians in the world. I'm not mad, get yours. My cone. Her name is Carolyn, she's heroin for gentlemen. Whatever you need, she's got the medicine. Femme fatale and sex is a weapon of choice. Sweater poison get you played like the rest of the toys. She's a heartbreaker, married to Marc Jacobs. She's hiding her intentions behind dark makeup. A temptress with a fetish for fine fabrics. No problem showing skin, a bet in her eyelashes. She'll be a schoolgirl, not a nurse, a secretary, to get what she needs by any means necessary. You stay secondary, all Sue and Lou seem all for the Louis. Gucci and True Jeans. She'll take that new ring, your house and your visa. Plus the two-seater, a true man-eater. So seductive, she'll make you blow your budget and take every ounce of your hope and crush it. You better keep your eyes open for little mistake. Falling in love with it, that's your first mistake. Take the money and run on to the next one. The only thing you got left is breadcrumbs. The keys to the car, she'll take it there. The ring in the car, she'll take it there. A piece of your heart, she'll take it there. She's taking everything and she ain't playing fair. Man, this girl is the easiest, sleaziest, and greediest. You can't say no. So what's between the hips? Now you're a feverish. She's got those ingredients, supply getting high. Anytime you need a fix, cash to support her, she'll have your daughter. And she'll go down quicker than a glass of water. And we all know what's the biggest drug of them all? The one she's pushing just to be up in the mall. Then she's shrugging it off, it's all part of the game. You know, action, life, caviar and champagne, 5 stars and brand names. Plus the accessories, hogging you mentally in love with the expertise. Strong out sexually becomes a necessity. She's locked and loaded with all the right weaponry. So seductive, she'll make you blow your budget to take every ounce of your hope and crush it. You better keep your eyes open for little mistake. Falling in love with it, that's your first mistake. Take the money and run on to the next one. The only thing you got left is breadcrumbs. The keys to the car, she'll take it there. The ring in the car, she'll take it there. A piece of your heart, she'll take it there. She's taking everything that she ain't playing fair.
She after a glamour life, but she working that pole. Her mama tired of digging pockets and then work on the soul. She's a gold digger, go figure, low on the totem pole. Hole with her friends, man, she's so bitter. Even copping more hours in the cold winter. Date them only 4 weeks and serve them cold dinner. You're gonna steal another heart and probably break it in two. Girl, you breaking the rules, loving wasn't meant for you. What a fool. I guess I'm a fool for love, I know it's true. Because she ain't the person I thought I knew she was. I guess I'm a fool for love, feel like I'm stupid, dumb. She in the mood for some, so she's sleazing. And I know the reason, she creep while you sleeping, overdrawing your visa. So seductive, make you blow your budget. Then take every ounce of your hope and crush it.
You better keep your eyes open for little mistake. Falling in love with it, that's your first mistake. Take the money and run on to the next one. The only thing you got left is breadcrumbs. The keys to the car, she'll take it there. The ring in the car, she'll take it there. A piece of your heart, she'll take it there. She's taking everything that she ain't playing fair.
To download a copy of the album for free, visit Johnny Utah online at johnnyutah.bandcamp.com. Oh, you lucky people, you have made it into the Sundance Recap featuring all of your favorite Slug movie writers. We have managing editor Esther Moronio, we have Slug's film critic Jimmy Martin, and we have Slug writer Cody Kirkland. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Howdy.
Welcome into the frosty confines of the Jeanette Moses Memorial icebox in the basement of Slug
Does that describe Jeanette?
That by no means describes Jeanette. We're here to talk about everything Sundance 2013 today. All of us have been up there, kind of moving around, checking stuff out. Why don't we just start with you know, any kind of general impressions you may have had of the fest, any trends that you noticed, any particularly noteworthy things. Esther, anything that comes to mind immediately?
Film-wise or, like, after-party-wise?
All of the above. The whole experience. You know, the whole experience up there.
Well, one thing I noticed was the weather was awesome.
Unbelievably awesome. Best Sundance weather ever,
I would say. Yeah.
I ate lunch outside.
Yeah, shirtless. Yeah. And also, I guess my very first impression walking out was how awesome the volunteers were. Like, they were always there at the bus stops helping out, directing us. They were really, really friendly in the press lines, which I felt like last year they got a little impatient with us.
Yeah.
But this year...
Probably deservedly so.
Yeah. This year everyone was just like really, really nice and really helpful, and it made everything so much easier.
Sunshine may have had something to do with that vibe.
Probably.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Jimmy, what do you think?
For me, I don't get the vibe that I kind of got last year where there were a lot of buzzworthy movies kind of buzzing around, like, you know, you had your Beast of the Southern Wild and stuff like that. There's a few out there that I've heard about that I haven't had the chance to see, like Fruitvale is kind of getting out there. It's been a pretty good year in the sense that, well, there hasn't been a lot of buzz, but I just read recently that it has been a year of a lot of films getting picked up for production cut, and for large amounts too, which worries a lot of people, because if you know the story of Happy Texas, they got picked up for $10 million and lost a lot of money. That's why a lot of people are wondering why they're getting so much publicity about that, because I think it's, what's the...
Was it the Way, Way Back they got the $10 million one?
That got like $9 million, I think, if I remember right. But it was Joseph Gordon-Levitt's John's Addiction.
Don John's Addiction.
Which, if you know anything about that, he's a porn freak.
Yeah, I saw that one.
I think it got a couple million, but like a $25 million advertising staple to it. So they're going to spend a lot of money to advertise this thing.
This guy was in Batman.
Yeah, right. Dude, you can't mess with JGL right now.
Right, that's right. Cody, anything that comes to mind immediately just when you think of Sundance 2013 as a concept?
I spent a lot of time in strip malls. I'll just say that. Last year, when I covered Slam Dance, I was up on Main Street every day. Most of the screenings are down in the strip mall area, and so it was weird being in strip malls for like a week straight.
When you go to press screenings, you don't really get that Main Street vibe at all. You get the tent vibe.
It was me drinking by myself in the Yarrow Bar and hanging out in a tent for a week.
Head over to the Fresh Market for a sandwich.
I go to Burger King.
Yeah, right.
The Wi-Fi code is I love bacon.
Oh, very good.
That's actually true.
Very good. Nice. Yeah, and any particularly, any celebrity sort of buffoonery that anyone ran across or had fun with? Or?
Oh my God. I saw Josh Hartnett.
Oh my God.
He's still alive?
Your dream.
I know.
And I talked to him.
Was he in Courtney Love's band?
Yeah, I was at the ASCAP Music Cafe, and I spotted him, and I had a huge crush on him when I was a teenager, so I had to say hello.
Excellent.
I guess his girlfriend is in one of the films showing, so.
Excellent.
Gotta support
him. I can appreciate that, you know, longtime fan, you get to meet someone.
Yeah. He made sure to mention his girlfriend from the very beginning.
Aww.
Quit hitting on me, lady.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to see the most of the celebrities I saw was actually at the Sound City concert
that was
Park City Live, which was Dave Grohl's. Actually, it's one of my favorite documentaries of the festival. But you know, it's everybody who was in this film: Stevie Nicks, Rick Springfield, John Fogerty. You know, all these people are just rocking that place insanely. So
3 hours plus,
dude, it was
unbelievable.
Yeah.
It was great.
My legs were numb when it was done.
And unfortunately, I had a beeline directly to the bar, and I was a wreck.
Oh, were you there?
Oh, yeah, I was there. And I had spent 2 hours with an open Grey Goose bar across the street at the Comedy Bang Bang podcast right before, so, whew. Great show. Great show.
Yeah, it was fun. I think that's all the ones, because otherwise I'm just in screenings all the time.
Yeah, exactly,
so
right?
And celebrities don't like us press people.
That's right. Seeing Tom Lennon at the Comedy Bang Bang thing, that was pretty cool. That was kind of exciting. But Cody, anything come across your transom?
I saw Michael Cera at the Tower Theater.
Oh, in Salt Lake appearance.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Second time I've seen him in Salt Lake, actually. Excellent. I saw his band play a couple years ago, but...
I served him a cocktail that night.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
Excellent.
Kate Bosworth retweeted one of my tweets.
Hey.
Yeah.
I got Dave Grohl to retweet me bitching about the price of his show. That was kind of nice.
Really?
That was a big moment for me. It was nice of him,
too. Wow.
But it was fun. Well, why don't we get into some of the movies that we've seen? I know all of us have probably a few favorites, and obviously there are many, many more films out there than we've all had a chance to see, but I bet we probably covered a lot of turf. Esther, why don't we go with one of yours first?
So my very, very favorite film at the festival this year was actually the very first one that I saw, and it was a documentary called When I Walk. Mm. And it's directed by Jason De Silva, who's actually been at Sundance before with a variety of shorts, and a pretty renowned documentary filmmaker. But he was diagnosed with progressive MS when he was 25, about 8 years ago. And so this documentary was kind of about him going through that. And multiple sclerosis kind of hits you from the bottom up. And he slowly becomes unable to walk, unable to move his hands, loses a lot of his motor functions. And all this, throughout this time, he's trying to film this documentary about this process in his life. And it was, I have to say, it's probably the best documentary I've ever seen. I kind of gravitate towards documentaries that are more, I guess, introspective and personal, okay, more than the political ones. And this one was just so, so personal and so open. And it also features clips of his illustrations, because he started out as an artist, a visual artist. So it's kind of compiled with some footage of him, you know, doing like personal in front of the camera confession type monologues, and then some footage of him, you know, like riding his wheelchair, and like he gets married and stuff like that. And then also some animated footage of his art, kind of to move the story along.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, mix it up visually with some of that. I like that. Yeah. Excellent. Any, either of you guys see that one?
I haven't.
I didn't.
Nice. See? Now I'm sold. I want to see it then.
I was going to go see it, but I read the description. I was like, I'm going to cry.
Right, yeah. I know, sometimes those descriptions, like, they're not only sometimes misleading, but they can turn you off something unnecessarily. Perhaps, you know, it happens to me, certainly. What else along your way, Esther? What else floated your boat this year?
Probably my second pick would be Cutie and the Boxer. It's another documentary that focuses on two Japanese artists, Yoshio Shinohara and his wife, Noriko Shinohara. They live in New York. They met there in the 70s, and it kind of focuses more on their relationship, as well as kind of their ups and downs in their art careers. And Yoshio is kind of the more notorious one. He does boxing painting, which when I read this, I was like, so he paints boxes, or he paints pictures of boxers?
Right.
No, what he actually does is he puts boxing gloves on with like paint rollers on them and boxes the canvas.
I saw a picture of this, and I was like, what is that little man doing?
Yeah.
That's what he's doing.
Yeah, and he's this little Japanese man, and he even makes like boxing noises while he does it. And he just, it takes like 2.5 minutes, and he just boxes, you know, from left to right.
Huh.
And he also makes these like crazy sculptures of motorcycles and just like really weird, you know, Japanese urban art, basically.
Huh.
And his wife does these comic style kind of self narrative, I guess, comics that are about her and her husband's relationship and how she's kind of felt stifled by him, and he sees her as his assistant, and she's kind of a little resentful of that. During the in the documentary, they're putting together an art show. Yeah, and it was so endearing to just see their relationship. And then it's also one of a documentary that's compiled with some of her illustrations animated to kind of tell the story of their past, along with some footage of them in the 70s. I think that the director, who is Zachary Heinzerling, this is his first documentary, or his first feature-length documentary, and he did such a great job of capturing them, and it's such a, also just such a bright film with all of the artwork, and Noriko has this really great style to her, and yeah, so I think it was great. And also, you can check out Yoshio's artwork at the Quack Center, which is over on 175 East 200 South in Salt Lake until March 10th.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great. Right in Salt Lake City. Excellent. Jimmy, highlight?
Yeah.
One, two? What do you got?
No, I've got a few, and it's funny. It's I'm glad that Sarah kind of reiterated what I kind of, the other thing I saw going on this festival is that documentaries are killing it this year.
Yeah.
And Sundance has always been known for their documentaries and their selections. To me, it's always been kind of balanced, maybe, but every documentary I've seen, which I think is probably about 80 to 85% of what I've seen this year, I haven't seen a bad one yet.
Nice.
And unfortunately, the three ones I didn't enjoy were pretty much the narratives that I, you know, not that I hated them. Well, a couple I did, but, yeah. But that's the one thing I've seen this year is that documentaries are just absolutely killing it. And there's still like four or five that I still want to see.
Yeah.
But again, to reinstate what I said before, Sound City, you know, Dave Grohl, what I said, and John Fogerty said it at the concert, and this is what it speaks volumes of what Dave Grohl is and how he said he's got a childlike wonder for music. And it just, it speaks in that documentary and makes you smile whether you love music or not. And it's got that Stacey Peralta, you know, sports doc kind of energy to it, you know, it's a soundtrack and whatnot.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's so much fun just to see music history coming to life, you know. And so that was with Sound City, but in kind of conjunction with that one was Muscle Shoals.
Oh, yeah.
Which is,
I'm dying to see that one.
It's so good. If you grew up on that kind of music, which is what I did, like, I'm from Georgia originally, and like that was the kind of music that like my dad grew up on, and like so I grew up on it too. And it's Jimmy Hughes and Aretha Franklin, and you know, and where soul came from, and it's from this backwoods next to the Tennessee River city. That it's amazing how you know that sound came out of there.
Studio where the people like the Stones or went down to try to capture the sound later on
because they heard about it across the pond, and they're like
Podunkville, Alabama,
right? And then so. And then those are the music ones I really enjoyed. And then I think the other one's called Blackfish. And this film is, if you ever wanted to hate SeaWorld with a passion, go see Blackfish, because it's the story of basically how SeaWorld has acquired a whale that was already known to have killed one or two trainers, and they still bought it, and then it's killed another one since then.
Oh, man.
And basically it's the crappy conditions that these whales live in, you know, and essentially one of the only reasons that they are allowing this whale to still, because like I said, now it's responsible, they try to cover it up, but it's basically responsible for three trainers' deaths.
Yeah.
Is it sperm? Because that means they don't have to buy whales anymore, and it's so
maybe even sell a couple whales on the side. Well, that's
what
people, right?
That's what they do. They're selling it over to I think a place out in Spain, like a water park out there. Like they're breeding whales with this whale, and it's been known to, and it still performs to this day.
This is the makings of its own.
Yeah,
great horror movie someday.
It's awful. I mean, the imagery in there, you see other trainers not die but get crushed by whales. You know, from the videos, it's horrifying to watch. And one I just watched today actually, and I didn't think I really like it that much, was The World According to Dick Cheney.
Oh yeah.
And it's basically just a profile of Dick Cheney, and it's whether you love him or hate him with a passion, you cannot deny the fact that that man has lived a interesting life, in the sense that from I think when he was like in his 20s, he was arrested twice for DUIs and like just basically like a shit bum, and his wife was like, get your fucking act together. And 12 years later he's like in the White House as like his chief of staff, and
right.
Like, and they show like each move that he does strategically, and like he's playing chess of how he got to that position. It's, you know, like I said, you may love him or hate him, but
yeah, that was one where I read the description. I'm like, do I really want an hour and a half or 2 hours?
Yeah.
Especially when I heard that he had given interviews to him. I'm like, oh, he probably owns the content of this or something, right?
You watch him and you're sitting there going, you're like, either you are completely full of shit and you know it, or you're just fucking oblivious to the world like that. But after you watch it, he's full of shit. He knows it. So, yeah, just docs, man.
Excellent, excellent. Cody, what were some of your highlights?
Probably my all-time favorite was Big Sur. I'm like obsessed with Jack Kerouac and that whole movement anyway. Yeah. And so I saw it knowing I'd like it whether it sucked or not. And it was really good. I don't know, it was just put together so well. And it was, a lot of the times I don't like adaptations of books that I've already read that are good anyway.
Sure.
It was just like perfect to the book. And a lot of Kerouac's poetry, the actor, I can't remember his name, but the one that portrayed Kerouac did like an amazing job reading like him, and it just showed perfectly him losing his mind and alcohol delirium, and it was nuts. And it was a really beautifully shot and put together film.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Another one, complete opposite end of the spectrum, was Hell Baby.
Oh, I wanted to see that one.
A divisive one from what I've noticed out there in the world on reactions to it.
I absolutely loved it, and it's like Rosemary's Baby plus the creators of Reno 911, because that's who made it. It was just so ridiculous and over the top and repetitive gags and demon babies. And
it has it all.
Like
demon babies.
Half dead, naked old women. And it was just so ridiculous that I don't know, I laughed harder than I have for a long time.
I've definitely, did any of you guys see that one?
I haven't.
I'm curious. I've heard good things, and I've seen people like, that was the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
But
those are probably people who maybe even aren't familiar with the people who made it. That happens.
And there were a million other horror film references and pop culture references, and it was really self-aware, and it knew that it was ridiculous.
Right.
And that's what made it really
funny. That sounds pretty good to me.
I think the Park City at Midnight series is one of the best things to watch because most people who come in town don't know what it is.
Yeah,
and like right. One of my favorite things to do is to count the walkouts because they're like so offended like, by things.
What the hell is this?
Yeah.
Yeah. We should also know. Yeah, I was thinking of the Sound City movie. By the time people can hear this, that's actually available for people to buy and check out, I think.
Yeah. I think Grohl's kind of pulling
February 1st or something.
Yeah. He's doing like the kind of the Kevin Smith thing where he's releasing himself like Kevin Smith did with Red State.
What is he made of distribution or whatever? He's April.
Yeah. Well, it kind of is. I mean, like Kevin Smith was kind of tell people like that's the way to do it nowadays. It's like, yeah, if you're Kevin Smith or if you're Dave Grohl, you know, you can do it. But like your average Joe is going to be like, I put it out there and three people bought it. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that was definitely a good one. The stuff I saw, I think I tend to lean towards documentaries just because a lot of the documentaries, they'll come to Sundance and then they'll kind of disappear into the ether. They'll get bought by BBC Australia or
HBO
something or whatever, right?
And then, yeah.
And I'll see great things that disappears or even HBO. But yeah, this year I thought the 20 Feet from Stardom one about the backup singers was really strong and obviously a lot of great voices of women that I had never heard of. That's kind of the point, right? Except for Darlene Love, who has gone on to become a solo star. But that was really good, really well made, really slick. And when you have Springsteen and Mick Jagger interviews in your movie and stuff, you're not that small a film, right? But the other one was the Pussy Riot documentary, Punk Prayer, that HBO did buy, actually. Mm-hmm. And what was most remarkable is, I mean, I knew the story a little bit about these women being arrested for hooliganism, basically for this public act of art in a cathedral there. But what you get, the filmmakers had incredible access both to the band and like their families, and then just the way they let the press into the courtrooms in Russia, like gathered around a cage where these women are sitting, poking their cameras at them.
Yeah.
The guards are yelling at the women for talking to each other while there's 50 guys with cameras in their face, and that's allowed. It was pretty crazy. So that was a really good one.
I know that 20 Feet from Stardom got picked up as well.
That's right. That got picked up by Harvey Weinstein, I think. That like the first night when it showed on the first Thursday or something like that. What about, you know, we heard about Big Sur. What about some other narrative films that folks have seen? Anything that you liked or even what really sucked that maybe has gotten good word out there?
I saw one called Shopping, which was from New Zealand about a kid who, I guess his brother's kind of special, you know, and so he spends a lot of time with him. His dad's an alcoholic, his mom's always gone. And he kind of gets involved in like this kind of crime underground of people like shoplifting and just robbing, you know, convenience stores and whatnot. And so he's kind of, you know, abandons his brother, and then he has to make the decision whether, you know, to kind of come back and protect his family. But it was fun. You know, it's good. Like, got some great characters, great acting, and it's supposed to take place in 1981, and the cinematography was, like, dead on of, like, this kind of that raw feeling that, you know, almost like it was all recorded on a VHS tape kind of thing.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Nice. Esther, anything in the...
Jimmy and I saw two films together that I'm kind of interested in hearing Jimmy's... I know that we disagree on Prince Avalanche.
Absolutely.
That one's got Paul Rudd and Emile Hirsch in it, and Jimmy was disappointed because... it wasn't the typical raunchy.
Oh, wasn't it? Because it wasn't raunchy. It's because you spent 80% of my film poking at, you know, shooting at trees and caterpillars and birds flying when I wanted to see a character piece.
And I love that stuff. I love the...
Well, that's why I said, then make a nature video.
An 80-minute nature
video. Go work for Discovery Channel.
But we also saw Austin Land together.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. So I'm kind of curious what you thought of it.
I enjoyed it. That's the Jerusha Hess, you know, wife of Jared Hess.
Right, local ties, author, Shannon Hale from Salt Lake or Provo or something, right? Period, sort of surreal.
It's a modern day, I would say, rom-com chick flick where Carrie Russell plays a girl who is a Jane Austen freak and basically signs up to go to this resort out like in London. And basically lives a Jane Austen lifestyle, you know?
Okay.
And so I liked it. It's got some dry spells, you know, where sometimes I, you know, if you're watching a comedy, I say, when was the last time I laughed? And like, if I start noticing, then you got a problem there, you know? And there's like at least like 20 minutes where I wasn't laughing. Or I started noticing that they were, because they know when those dry spells happen and they try to pull the same joke over and over. I can't think of I always call her Stifler's mom because she plays
Jennifer Coolidge.
Jennifer Coolidge. And they always like, oh, you know, when we're having a dry spell, get her to yell something stupid. And then they're like, okay, it's funny the first time.
It's just
time.
Like American Pie.
Right, you know? And so Brett McKenzie's in it, who kind of a charming leading man. And you do get to hear him sing if you guys know Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah.
But I didn't hate it. You know, it's just, it was a simple rom-com chick flick that, you know, I think girls will enjoy and guys
and
will
like. And it got bought.
Yeah, it totally got bought. You know, that was obvious it was going to get bought. But.
Esther, what do you think of it?
Well, I think that girls who live in Provo will definitely enjoy this.
Yeah, that's true.
But I had some problems with it because I love Jennifer Coolidge, and I think that she was this kind of saving grace of the film, but I think that it had some plot holes, and one of them was I had a feminist issue with this film.
Mm.
I love Jane Austen, I love Pride and Prejudice, and I think that the characters in it are, if you look into it, it's strong women, and this film was full of very weak female stereotypes. And one of my problems was that the main character, Jane, who's played by Carrie Russell, is sexually assaulted by one of the other characters, and she doesn't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Nothing is done about it at all.
I did actually have a problem with that scene, because I was like, really? Like, you're just going to let that one slide?
She gets saved by her white knight, and then you know, it's 2013, and she doesn't press charges or anything. I'm sorry, but I had a big problem with that, especially because it is written by people with BYU degrees who are perpetuating these kind of weak female Mormon stereotypes that I am not okay with.
That's interesting.
And also, I feel like Jane Austen deserves better.
Good. Well, now I really want to see what the reaction will be when it comes out to the public or out here. You know, it'll be interesting. Jimmy mentioned something that it was kind of interesting to me, you know, waiting for a laugh in a movie. When I went and saw the Way, Way Back, which you mentioned a minute ago, it's pretty much a trifle of a movie, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's not – did you see that one?
No, that's one with Steve Carell, though, right?
Steve Carell as a boyfriend. It's really a coming-of-age tale. Teenage boy goes to the beach with his mother and her boyfriend, who is Steve Carell, and, you know, falls in with some lovable characters in the town that help him make it through a tough family time. Right?
Sure.
Very stereotypical. Laugh through the whole thing, though. Like, there was enough great characters and jokes, and Sam Rockwell was just hilarious every time he was on.
When is he not?
Allison Janney is a wacky drunk next door neighbor, kills it every time she's in.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're sitting there through the movie going, okay, this is kind of cute and cuddly. And it was written by the guys who wrote The Descendants, the George Clooney movie.
Oh, okay.
Jim Rash was actually there in house. He's the crazy dean from Community for Community fans out there. And Nat Faxon, his co-writer, is Ben from the recently canceled Ben and Kate. But yeah, really funny all the way through. And at the end, I'm like, well, it's pretty mainstream and pretty ordinary plot. A lot of people have compared it to Meatballs, and it's very much like that. Bill Murray, old 70s movie where he's a camp counselor. But laugh through the whole thing. And I'm like, I'm not going to complain about that,
For sure.
At all. That was kind of a treat.
Yeah, I think like my biggest thing to kind of – it's how many times you laugh, or for me, the opposite direction is how many times have I looked at my watch? And when we saw Prince Avalanche, like my watch was like on the entire time. I'm like, oh, God.
That was me watching The Lifeguard. I'm like, that was the longest 90 minutes I've had this year.
It bummed me out because Prince Avalanche got picked up. And I go, people are not going to – they're going to expect a Paul Rudd movie, and they're not going to get it.
It's not going to be that.
Yeah. No.
Cody, any other kind of the narrative side of things that you ran across that you liked or disliked actively?
There's one I actively disliked. I kind of don't want to talk about it because it's just like, it was like a family film and I shouldn't have seen it anyway. But Toy's House.
Oh, yeah. I think that one's got either some good buzz
it's got a lot of, I think.
Yeah. I've read a
like
lot about
it. Like semi-famous actors in it, and it was just a big stinker. Like, people were walking out during that. And
oh, really?
It did have Ron Swanson.
Oh, yeah.
He had that actor in it, and that was great. Like, he's always funny. It doesn't matter what he does or what he says.
He's
hilarious.
I saw too.
But it was just, like, so absurd, and just these two high school kids decide that their parents suck and they're mean, and so they run away and build a house in the forest. And it was just so retarded. And, like, the climax is a fucking snake comes out of the woods and is, like, attacking them. That's, like, the climax.
Do they die?
One of the kids got bit. And
not enough of them.
The other kid, instead of trying to kill the snake, he jumped in front of the snake to save the girl.
Aww.
It's a jumping snake.
That's valiant.
Then, like, leaping out from the...
And then he killed the snake, and it was so... It made me sad.
Sounds skippable.
Very skippable.
Well, why don't we get a little just sort of last thoughts? I mean, did the films overall exceed expectations about Land where you thought it would be? I mean, better than past experiences for those of you who have had past experiences?
I felt really inspired this year by the documentaries. I think that all of them kind of left me with something to take away, and I'm excited to share them with people. That's kind of the part that sucks about Sundance is that, you know, you see them and then they go away, and it's like maybe a year later they'll pop up on Netflix and you'll get to share them with your friends and family.
Right. Go see this. Get this. Rent it. Stream it. Whatever.
Yeah, but I think that there were a lot of documentaries that were great, like Jimmy was saying.
Jimmy?
Yeah, that my biggest walkaway from probably this year is going to be that the documentaries just completely, you know, overthrew the narratives. And we still got 3 days of this left, and I still want to go see more documentaries. The one I've heard a lot of really good things about is The Crash Reel.
Yeah.
Which is the Kevin Pierce story, snowboarder.
I've heard good things.
I've heard that. It's amazing. They actually added a screening on tomorrow, I think. So I'm going to go to that one. I think it may be a surprise. Not even surprised, because like I said, Sundance is known for their docs, but maybe surprised at the lack of enthusiasm for the narratives.
Yeah.
And there's been plenty of years. I mean, I've been doing this. This is my 12th year doing this. And there's been years where I saw 20 films and they all sucked, in my opinion. You know, it just happens. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's hit or miss. You never know what going into these things. You don't know why things get into a festival, you know,
right.
For many reasons, I'm sure.
Often right after you've seen it.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
What?
But yeah, I mean, it's still a fun experience. I love every minute of it. So.
Yeah, I always pray to be like 50-50. If I get half the movies to be good, where I felt like that was a good use of my 90 minutes or 2 hours and the line time and whatever, I'm pretty happy. And I've been better than that this year myself, just by luck so far. I mean, I'm going to try to see some more. Yes, we are recording while this is still going, ladies and gentlemen. But I've had a good year too. Cody, how about you? What do you think?
I'm just glad that I didn't pass out this year. I'm glad that I didn't almost die in a blizzard this year.
Oh, yeah.
I did pass out last year during a documentary. But
because of the documentary or because of other issues?
Because of the documentary.
Whoa.
It was human suspension. It was at Slam Dance, and I woke up laying on a guy. But
again? No, sorry.
Yeah, it was really... I mean, I only saw one film that I thought sucked, and some inspiring filmmaking, and the Pussy Riot documentary, that was pretty inspiring.
I wanted to go buy a t-shirt and some albums right
afterwards. Yeah, I got a button.
Nice.
I got an eye, excellent. And it had heart, heart, heart with the three colors of their masks.
Yeah,
nice. Pussy Riot. But yeah, like, just way stoked on film.
Oh, great time. Well, everybody, I hope some people got to check some stuff out themselves, and obviously we'll let you know as things are leaking out over the next year plus of these things. You can obviously go on to slugmag.com and check out all the reviews and coverage from the festival from Esther Moronio, Cody Kirkland, and Jimmy Martin. Thank all you guys for coming in once again this year.
Thanks, man.
Good luck. As always, thanks for listening to the Soundwaves from the Underground podcast. And for all things Slug Magazine and Slug-related, visit slugmag.com. Coming up, we're going to have a new segment based around band singles and musicians looking for bands to join. Are you currently looking for a band but aren't quite finding the right people to mix it up with? Let us know and we'll do our best to do a little bit of matchmaking for you on an upcoming episode. You can either send an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. That voicemail line is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Let us know what kind of band you're looking to join, and we might just have the band for you. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. Associate producers are Esther Moronio, Ricky Vigil, Alexander Ortega, and myself, Dan Nalen. The executive producer is Angela H. Brown. The theme song was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. The main logo and art design is by T. Doan, and technical design is by Kate Colgan. Next week, you'll definitely want to fire up the old podcast again. We'll have Squatters head brewer Jason Stock here in the studio. We'll have Plan B Theater's Adam and Steve broken down with an interview, and we'll talk about Revolution United. Thank you very much. See you next week.